You are listening to the True Frequency Radio Network.
No hate, no hype, no fear.
Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys for tuning in today. It is straight up 10 o'clock Central Time, and we are live. This is, of course, your Red Pill Reports for the 10th day of the 12th month, 10th of December, and it is Wednesday today, ladies and gentlemen. Hope you guys are having a wonderful day so far, and cannot thank you guys enough for tuning in every day. I've been watching the website, traffic growing, and just cannot thank you guys enough, people who are checking out the site, checking out the show, sharing it with your friends and things like that. It's a really, really awesome. That's an awesome thing to be a part of. I want to thank you guys for doing that. So yesterday was an interesting day, was it not? I don't know about you guys, but after our discussion with, Ms. Brewer, I had to go descramble my brain for a little while. I thought it was a very enjoyable discussion. Learned a whole lot of interesting stuff. A little bit out there, though. Hope you guys stuck with it through that whole thing. Today is going to be a completely different change of pace. I'm telling you right now, we won't be out in the ether at all today. We'll be, mostly around Russia and Crimea and the Middle East. Because we are going to be joined at 11 o'clock by the one and only Rick Rozoff. Now, Rick Rozoff is a very... very smart guy, and he has been studying NATO and the militarization of the world for decades now, and he's going to give us some insight. I don't know about you guys, but I have a lot of trouble trying to keep tabs on all of the events that are going on, not just in the Ukraine, but you've got NATO involvement in Africa now. We've got Russia doing all kinds of different things in the Baltic states. And I've been having a lot of trouble keeping my scorecards straight and keeping my players straight. And, so speaking with Rick yesterday, he was able to really kind of straighten me out, help bring this whole situation back into focus. I'll promise you guys, it's not nearly as complex as it seems. They're all bad guys. Oh, spoiler alert. They're all bad guys. Anyway, Rick Rozoff at 11 o'clock today. I think you guys will really enjoy this discussion and, giving you a heads up about tomorrow. LC Vinson is going to be back on the program again. We'll probably pick up the conversation about the 440 versus 432, where we left off last time, but we'll probably also do some rehashing because I remember last time, we had some pretty significant, we'll say technological issues, some pretty significant communication issues. So, do stick around for that tomorrow. That should be a great show. Want to also recommend everybody, if you go to redpillreports.com, a new article has been posted under this whole mortgage crisis debacle, and the new article is Largest Tax Fraud, Security Fraud, and Bankruptcy Ever. This was put together by the staff here at Red Pill, and it's also got the extended interview that Greg Morse did over with David Knight at InfoWars. So I would highly, highly recommend checking this interview out and passing it around. Also, if you go to redpillreports.com and just go on the homepage, right at the top section there is the featured section, underneath the title Mortgage Crisis. There are actually 9 different articles that outline exactly what in the world has happened. And one of them, most importantly is, how to tell if your home has, if your mortgage has been compromised, excuse me here. So, it's learn if your mortgage is compromised. Very important stuff there for people at home who want to find out, if they are in this mess, give you a quick heads up. You're probably in this mess also. Most homes, as far as Greg is concerned, about 90% of the mortgages out there are affected by this MERS situation. And it just gets bigger and bigger from there. So please go ahead, check out those articles. Please go and sign Greg's petition. This is something we can all actually do to accomplish a goal here. Go and sign his petition, ladies and gentlemen. It's so easy. You just have to be a registered voter, and we can get something actually actionable to happen here. So please go and do that. Also, on a side note, please check out the Carrot Bars link at the top of our page at redpillreports.com. It is literally the best gold savings plan that you can get involved with today. So I won't say any more about that, but please go check out that link, and definitely please go and sign Greg's petition. That is going to be a big deal going forward. And so every day I'm going to say that from now on. So that's what I'd like you guys to do. Let's get into some international news right now. There have been a lot of developments going on around the world, and a couple of them are starting to get a little concerning. One of the pieces of info that hit my radar yesterday, and it has not been in mainstream news. I haven't even seen an article about it yet. But the city of London yesterday had a pretty significant police force lockdown. We're talking about the Midland Police Department there in the UK. Early in the morning, every single police officer was ordered back to the base, got them off of the streets, and then essentially told them not to take public transport home. Asked them all to go and wipe their social media to basically try and hide the fact that they were law enforcement officers. And, of course, this is in the UK. So some sort of credible threat happened yesterday in the UK, and law enforcement definitely on edge about it. They're apparently back to normal activity today. But so that was interesting. I was reading about that in some forums yesterday, and there was a lot of tweeting and things like that that led me to believe something pretty significant was happening in the UK. And then there has been a new report now coming out of ISIS. Obviously, we had the report last week where the alleged weapons maker, I can't think of his name, Brittani, I think is his fake new Islamic name, said essentially that the Islamic State had acquired enough material to build a dirty bomb or a radioactive device. Well, apparently, just Monday this week, that same gentleman has come out and said now that the radioactive device that they were capable of making has been made and has now been smuggled into an undisclosed location inside of Europe. And this report comes from the Washington Free Beacon, not a joke site here at all. So according to him, Muslim al-Brittani, according to his Twitter page, he says a radioactive device has now entered someplace into Europe. And obviously this comes days after reports emerged that the IS could have in its possession this dirty bomb. And they also, at the time, had said that elements of which were obtained earlier during ISIS raids on the university research facility in Mosul that contained uranium. And, of course, Brittani has been responsible solely for the flurry of the reports of this bomb, and the dirty bomb and whatever. But he does also have a history of disseminating via Twitter weapons instructions and manuals and things like that. But now does say that, in fact, a dirty bomb has been smuggled into Europe, which is kind of startling, A, in and of itself, but B, when you follow it up with this particular story that broke on Yahoo News last evening out of Moldova, where seven people have been detained on suspicion that they were smuggling uranium and mercury in a metal container from Russia to be used in a dirty bomb. And this is according to police just as of yesterday. House searches were carried out last week in the capital of Moldova and in two other towns, and police confiscated 200 grams, or 7 ounces, or about a half a pound, of uranium-238 mixed with uranium-235. They also found about 2.5 pounds of mercury and another unidentified radioactive solid material. That material, smuggled by train, has a black market value of about 1.6 million euros, or about $2 million. So that's a pretty significant story coming out of Moldova, where it's unusual because they're saying they're suspected of smuggling uranium. But unfortunately, they were found with almost a half a pound of uranium-238, which really is kind of worst case scenario in terms of the material that these people could have and what they could be doing with it. U-238 You can enrich it into like fissile material of nuclear warheads, or you could also convert it into plutonium, which would also be fantastic to use in a nuclear missile or a dirty bomb or something like that. So, you know, that's a pretty big deal. We got a lockdown event going on in the middle of the UK. We've got nine people arrested for suspected smuggling of uranium when they have, you know, a half a pound on them. And then reports coming out of ISIS saying that we have built a dirty bomb in it someplace in Europe right now. So, man, I don't know, but I don't like where we're going with all that. So just trying to give you guys a heads up. No indication anything like that's going on here in the country right now. But, man, if I was in the UK or someplace in Europe, I'd be paying attention. Okay, moving on. The anti-ISIS coalition fighters are apparently very, very low on ammo. Okay, so fighters who are battling the ISIS state terror group on the ground are running dangerously low on ammo, according to media that they have told. They only have a few days of ammunition reserves left before they become defenseless against the jihadists. This was a tribal leader speaking to a London-based and Saudi-owned Asharq al-Sat, which is a newspaper there. They go on, this tribal chief goes on to say that he has sent messages to the prime minister of Iraq telling him about our situation and asking him to either accelerate our arming or allow us to purchase arms at our own expenses and then register them with the government. So essentially what's going on is these groups are not being supported by the Iraqi government in a way that they feel, is acceptable. But if they were going to go out and get military weapons by themselves, that would effectively turn them into a militia, and they don't want to be a militia. They're still trying to work inside the country, you know, with the parliament and the people who are in charge, you know. So they're not able to get what they need to get, but it's important for them to not, you know, delve into the arena of being a militia. So we shall see what happens there. I would imagine that their shortage of ammo, probably part of the plan, part of the let's let ISIS continue to spread sort of motif that we've been seeing for a long time. Good news coming out of the International Criminal Court. As far as I'm concerned, they have officially granted Palestinians observer status at a meeting of the 122 member countries. This is actually a very pivotal step on the way to Mohammed Abbas' strategy to press war crime charges against Israel. It's still unclear if Palestine can actually sue Israel because the court's judicial body has not recognized it as a state. But Abbas is planning to pursue a full membership in the court if the UN Security Council fails to act on proposed resolutions to compel Israel to withdraw and cease all activity beyond the pre-1967 demarcation line, which obviously is not going to happen. Every time Netanyahu comes on TV, he wants to bulldoze something or build something in somebody else's property. So obviously, you know, Abbas is up against a pretty big battle here. And that's what else is important to understand about this is that it's fairly symbolic and it's a non-binding. It doesn't really have any effect on future decisions by the judicial body, although it is the very first time that Palestine has been recognized outside of Palestine in the ICC. So this really is actually a very, very big deal. The Rome Statute, which is ICC's founding document, says that if Palestine were to become party to it, then the international court would have a free hand in assessing all alleged war crimes committed on the Palestinian territory. Although what's important to remember here also is that because Israel is not itself a member, and only its membership in addition to Palestine could open it up for ICC investigation. So Abbas is not only fighting the fact that he is not part of the ICC, which he wants to use to sue, but also the fact that Israel is not part of that as well, which means they're not subject to lawsuit by it. So, in the end here, the chair actually listed the state of Palestine amongst the attendees invited for the Monday session. And, other people could have at that point voiced their objections, but no one did. So I take this as a great sign. I think that recognizing the Palestinian state, if only to curtail some of the activities of Israel, mandatory. We just have to do it. Here's a story that came out yesterday that I completely missed because, well, there's just so much happening. Sometimes that stuff goes by my radar. But NATO jets, and obviously we're going to be talking to Rick Rozoff at 11 o'clock, so I'll bring this story up with him. But NATO jets intercepted more Russian military planes over the Baltic Sea than in the past weeks combined, as Lithuanian media said its army units were put on a higher alert because of military moves in the Russia's Kaliningrad enclave. So the North Atlantic Treaty Organization's aircraft actually confronted 28 planes on the 8th of December. So that was, what, Monday? Okay, including... So 28 Russian planes total, Tu-95 and Tu-22 strategic bombers. But here's the deal. They always come back to this. Over, quote-unquote, neutral waters over Latvia's maritime border. The Baltic countries' armed forces, according to their Twitter feed on Monday. So then yesterday, this is a separate incident, 13 more Russian planes were intercepted in the same region while... Estonian Defense Forces says a large number of military aircraft were flying above the Baltic Sea again. But here's the deal. It's not against the law to be flying over international waters. So, you know, it really seems unusual to me that, that these Baltic states are going up into areas that are technically not under any kind of, you know, these aren't borders. These aren't internationally controlled airspaces. These are wide open airspaces. And then so NATO goes up and intercepts these planes and then shoes them back towards Russia against, you know, against the will of Russia, I imagine. And then says, you know, we are responding to these high alert level, you know, incidents. Well, it's like, pretty sure the Baltic states are just as complicit in creating these high level incidents. That's all I'm saying. I don't understand why, you know, apprehending or trying to get close to these Russian ships or Russian planes out in, you know, uncontrolled airspace makes a lot of sense. But apparently that's what we're doing. So we'll talk to Rick about that here in the next hour. Okay, moving on to Hong Kong right now. Everybody's been following the Occupy protest encampments in downtown Hong Kong right now. But they have now, the Hong Kong police, they have now announced plans to clear the last of the Occupy protest encampments that have blocked key roads in the financial hub for the last 2 months, setting up what could be the final showdown with pro-democracy activists on Thursday. So tomorrow, probably happening tomorrow, this will be going down. Police spokesman said police would help implement a court-ordered injunction on Thursday morning to clear away street blockades and a sea of tents now standing on a major highway and roads around Admiralty, which is home to government offices and the next main central business district. Police will take resolute actions against anyone who obstructs or violently charges the bailiffs who are executing their duty. The police spokesman also told reporters that police will also remove obstacles blocking the road if need be, so the public can resume their daily lives. They said they have urged protesters to leave peacefully beforehand, as there won't be very much time for them to pack their personal belongings on the day. So be on the lookout for more violence being perpetrated against protesters in the UK. Also in the news, Ukraine right now, protests are jumping up in the center of the country, not just on the east or inside of Kiev. But about 5,000 people in the central Ukrainian region of Vinnytsia took to the streets to demand the resignation of the regional council. Protesters want an investigation into recent clashes in which residents called a provocation. On Monday, protesters occupied the central square and blocked nearby roads in the city of Vinnytsia, which is the hometown of the Ukrainian president. The rally participants called for Ukrainian authorities, including President Petro Poroshenko and PM Yatsenyuk, to investigate the clashes that occurred in the city on the 6th and 7th of December. On Saturday, about 400 activists stormed the buildings of the regional council and called for the resignation of Governor Olenyuk. Olenyuk started serving under the ousted Ukrainian President Yanukovych back in 2010, and at least 8 police officers were injured during the clashes with protests on Saturday. The next day, which was the 7th, about 200 activists again demanded the resignation of Olenyuk, and the crowd chose Mr. Furman, Alexei Furman, from the Nationalist Svoboda Party as the people's governor of the region. So, interesting that the issues going on in the east are starting to move closer and closer to Kiev. We'll talk again, as I said, about... I want to learn more about this Svoboda Party, the Nationalist Svoboda Party there, and I think that Rick Rozoff will be a really good a really good man to talk to about that. So looking forward to that at 11 o'clock. Okay. Let's see. Israel has arrested a man who is apparently plotting attacks on Muslim holy sites, which seems unusual to me. It should also seem unusual that this gentleman was a Texan. His name was Adam Livix. He's said to be a Christian and a native of Texas, just being born back in 84, so relatively young guy, been charged with possession of weapons and being in Israel illegally. According to the police, suspect admitted during questioning to having suggested committing attacks on Muslim holy sites in Israel. And the statement from the police also said that weapons stolen from the Israeli army were found in his home. Okay, this kind of makes my head want to explode. So the police also said that he was wanted in the United States on a drug-related matter and that his arrest was made for in collaboration with the U.S. Federal Bureau of Investigation. So this gentleman moved to Palestine, lived in Palestine for a number of years, where he was allegedly approached by a Palestinian to try and assassinate Barack Obama. No indication of which way that wind started to blow. So he left and he moved into Israel illegally about a year and a half ago. And so somehow between moving to Israel and a year and a half ago, and he, how do you get weapons from the Israeli army and then squirrel them away into your home? This whole thing reeks of a setup to me, I guess. Long story short here, guys. I don't buy it. Young guy in Israel. A, why would they arrest him for preparing to attack Muslim holy sites? I mean, obviously, kind of what Israel is all about. So I'm not really sure why they would have stopped him unless this was some kind of nurtured event. And they wanted to, I don't know. This whole story just doesn't make any sense to me. So if you guys have any insight on that, please check that one out. Let me know what you guys think. Let's move on to some national news right now. I want to give everybody a heads up. If you're out in California, San Francisco is going to be hit real hard tomorrow with what they are essentially saying would be a hurricane-level storm if it was out at sea. The winds may be just below the hurricane level strength, which is effectively about 74 miles an hour. But you're going to be right in that boat tomorrow, guys. They're talking about sustained winds, especially in the higher elevations. This is all around San Francisco, so North California right now. Essentially, what they're saying too is that across the Sierra summits and the Sierra Nevadas, they're looking at winds gusting over 100 miles an hour. Lots and lots of rain. This is going to be a big deal, guys. We're talking about a place where we've had a lot of drought, and then we've had a lot of saturation because there was a pretty big storm last week. When you have drought and saturation at the same time, you're going to get landslides. You're going to get, you know, the mudslides and things like that. They're calling for at most 8 inches of rain tomorrow. I mean, we're talking major, major flash flooding risks. So if you are up in that area, do be safe. Keep your head on a swivel if it's not worth, you know, stay out of low areas. Don't go camping out in any gullies or anything like that. And as another side note, if you're in San Francisco, man, Mavericks is just going to be going off, you guys. They're talking about 30-foot waves up at Mavericks. So that's where I'd be, just giving you guys a heads up. Anyway, San Francisco going to be hit pretty hard. Be safe out there. And if you can't be safe, man, get out to Mavericks. Catch some of them big waves, 30-foot swells. Whew, I wouldn't do it. I'm just kidding. That's a little too risky for my blood. I'd stand on the shore and watch people, though. Okay, probably also the largest story in the national news right now has to do with this torture report that just came out yesterday. And I got an opportunity to go through quite a bit of it last night. I don't even know what to say about it, ladies and gentlemen. You know, I'm kind of in the boat right now where if you needed another reason to indict Bush and Cheney and all these idiots on international charges, you know, crimes against humanity, you've got it. We have the information. It's completely out in the open. Even Ben Emmerson is saying the same thing. He's a UN Nations, United Nations Special Reporter on Human Rights, and he's saying, you know, at this point, there's absolutely no reason that we should avoid prosecuting the entire Bush administration. It's actually a matter of international law that the U.S. is now legally obliged to bring these people who are responsible to justice, and that falls squarely on the U.S. Attorney General. So wondering if we're going to see anything like that happen. But see, there's a lot of other caveats to this story most people aren't really thinking about. It's international law now prohibits granting immunity to public officials who have engaged in acts of torture. So we cannot, at this point, give Bush immunity. If he knew that this stuff was going on, and it does turn out as it has turned out, that he was responsible for fostering an environment where this stuff was acceptable. Well, he is complicit in that. And if we tortured people to death, then he needs to be prosecuted for that. The other issue is that torture is actually an international crime. So he doesn't even need to be prosecuted here in the United States. If he goes to any other country, he can be arrested there, as can Cheney, as can Rummy, all these idiots. So I'm hoping that the Bush family takes a nice little vacation sometime soon, and somebody with bigger cojones than our U.S. Justice Department gets a hold of these people and prosecutes them, because we, you know, as Mr. Barack Obama said, well, we tortured some people. And apparently, according to this report, it is so much worse than that. I mean, we are talking about 6,000 pages of just disgusting, disgusting information. I mean, we're going to have to take a quick 3-minute break. I'll come back and I'll go through some of the details that involved in this torture report. But, you know, there's really no way to just, to put it mildly, I guess, is I'll give you the heads up now. There's nothing mild about this. We drowned people. The words rectal feeding come up. I mean, it's just as awful as it could possibly be. And we paid for it. And we, you know, and the other thing is, too, is you don't have to be an idiot to realize that zero information garnished from a torture situation is valid. None of it. You know, if you torture somebody, they're going to tell you that they were the second gunman on the grassy knoll. You know, it's useless information. And even, you know, I never thought I'd agree with John, for the love of God, McCain, but he even came out yesterday and said this was a stain on our ethics and a stain on our country. And I have to admit, I completely agree with him. So anyway, we're going to come back from this 3-minute break. We'll get into some more national news. Another Bosnian was injured in St. Louis. We'll talk about that. We've got some health and some tech stuff coming up, too. Keep it right here, guys. This is your Daily Dose of Deprogramming. My name is JD, and we'll be back in 3 minutes. Keep it right here, guys.
So, you want the news and information without the hate, the hype, the fear? Well, you've come to the right place. You can support Truth Frequency Radio by spreading the word on social networking sites like Facebook, Twitter, or your favorite forums. Want to take Truth Frequency Radio on the road? Listen on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or other mobile devices. Want more than just the free stuff? Sign up for a VIP membership for as little as $4 a month and get super high-quality downloads, member-only content, and instant access to your favorite shows without the wait. It's only through your loving support that we're able to cover the cost and continue broadcasting. So now, stay tuned for more Free Speech Radio right here on the Truth Frequency Radio Network. KTFRN, worldwide.
Big business has discovered the preparedness market, and that makes it difficult to know where to go and who to trust. MyPatriotSupply.com is owned and operated by patriots just like you, has the best prices on storable food, non-GMO seeds, water filtration devices, home canning equipment, survival and self-reliance books, and more. MyPatriotSupply.com has old-fashioned values and the absolute best customer service in the industry. Look for the deal of the day, unique, affordable survival supplies that fit anyone's budget. Get same-day shipping on all orders and free shipping on orders over $49. Call 866-229-0927, 866-229-0927, or visit MyPatriotSupply.com for emergency preparedness, self-reliance, and food independence. Shop with a name you know and a name you can trust. Before it's time to survive, it's time to prepare. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Did you know there are 3 million edible food plants on Earth, and none have the nutritional value of the hemp plant? HempUSA.org offers you hemp protein powder. It does not contain chemicals or THC, is non-GMO, and is 100% gluten-free. Hemp protein powder burns fat, builds muscle, contains 53% protein, and feeds the body the nutrients it needs. Call 888-910-4367 and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org. Wouldn't it be nice to have one product that replaces more than 10, saving you space, time, and money? HempUSA.org has a complete full-spectrum vitamin mineral detox formulation called Micro Plant Powder Gold. Micro Plant Powder Gold contains 101 vitamins, minerals, probiotics, and iodine, has a 100-year shelf life, and is a perfect addition to any storage shelter. Make Micro Plant Powder Gold your choice. Call 888-910-4367 or visit HempUSA.org today.
Sound Doctrine Ministries with Kenneth Emmanuel.
Sundays on True Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys for sticking with us through that 3-minute break. It is, I can't even tell you how hard it is to read some of this stuff in this CIA report that just came out, but it's exhaustive detail, ladies and gentlemen. It really gives a very macabre accounting of some of the grisliest techniques that the CIA used to torture and imprison terrorist suspects. Detainees were apparently deprived for sleep for as long as a week and were sometimes told that they would be killed while in American custody. With the approval of the CIA's medical staff, some prisoners were subjected to medically unnecessary rectal feeding and rectal hydration, a technique that the CIA's chief of interrogations described as a way to exert total control over the detainee. CIA medical staff members described the waterboarding of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, the chief planner, supposedly of the September 11th attacks, as a series of near drownings, 11 of which, we should say. Report also suggests that more prisoners were subjected to waterboarding than the three that the CIA had acknowledged in the past. The committee obtained a photograph of a waterboard surrounded by buckets of water at a prison in an Afghanistan prison, commonly known as the Salt Pit, a facility where the CIA had claimed that waterboarding was never used. One clandestine officer described the prison as a dungeon, and another said that some of the prisoners there looked like dogs who had been kenneled. Man, I got to step away from this. I can't read all this stuff, but if you go to redpillreports.com, you can see all of the links under the show section for today, and you can follow along. But this situation right now, I mean, what are we going to do? Where are we at right now? We're essentially in a position where Barack Obama is kind of left really trying to chart a middle course between denouncing the program that he ended, according to him, during the first week in office, and then defending the CIA, which he has obviously come out and said, you know, the CIA employees are patriots and we owe them a profound debt of gratitude and all of this stuff. But then he'll come on TV and he'll say, you know, we use stuff that was technically torture and it's a betrayal of American values. So what's going to be the result of this? You know, are we going to see some low-level CIA lackeys kind of get slapped on the wrist, or will it be business as usual? I don't know. I also wonder what the ramifications of this coming out now in terms of, you know, the impression that that the world community has of America. You know, if we come out, not only have we been torturing people, but we redacted, you know, 80% of this report and then slowed it down by 5 years just so we wouldn't get this information out in public. I can't imagine what anybody out there in the world community is going to be thinking about America now. I can't imagine that they would have gotten more cheerful and, you know, warm fuzzies in their heart after reading this report. But again, go to redpillreports.com and you can find article there, Panel Fault, CIA Over Brutality and Deceit in Terrorism Interrogations. I hope somebody at the CIA gets put in jail for this, but I doubt that's going to happen. Speaking of goofy stuff, New York already now beginning to confiscate guns from owners that they deem to be mentally unstable. Right now, they have identified less than 300, but more than 250 licensed gun owners who could lose their weapons because they are considered to be mentally unstable. This obviously has a lot to do with the SAFE law, the SAFE Act, which took effect back in March as legislators quickly tried to push through a law with zero public input after the mass alleged shooting at the Sandy Hook Elementary. So that's what's going on there. Essentially, psychiatrists, other health professionals began reporting these individuals to the state because they appeared to be at risk of harming themselves or others. And under a provision in the New York Safe Act gun control law, mental health providers have reported nearly 40,000 at-risk patients, 1,000 of them just from central New York. And then these reports are cross-checked against a list of pistol permit holders. And, man, just a slippery slope there in New York. So if you've seen a psychiatrist in New York and you have a concealed weapons permit, man, I don't know. Not good. Not good looking for you guys right now. Speaking of not good looking, GOP, this omnibus spending bill, reportedly now, the one that the GOP is drafting here, it reportedly includes nearly $1 billion to help poor and unskilled Central American migrants establish themselves in the United States, but includes no effective restrictions on President Barack Obama's plan to provide work permits and tax payments to millions of resident illegal immigrants. So the new spending works out to be about $17,000 for each of the 56,000 youths, young adults, and children who crossed the border during the 12 months up until October of 2014. Prior to 2014, Obama officials actually only sent home 1,900 of the migrants back to Honduras, El Salvador, Nicaragua, etc. Much of the $948 million may also be used to care for the next wave of illegals, which could flood across the border during this upcoming summer, because the influx in the summer of 2015 is expected to be really big, because obviously Obama is offering work permits and Social Security numbers to at least 5 million illegals already here. So why wouldn't more people want to come and join them? So that's right, nearly $1 billion as part of the one-year, $1 trillion 2015 spending plan. According to the New York Times, almost $1 billion going to illegal immigrants, essentially. So that's good news. Okay, moving through another quick thing here. I got to talk about this. Another Bosnian person. This was a woman. Was attacked in St. Louis. This is obviously following after Zemir Bejic was attacked less than a week ago by a bunch of youths with hammers. This particular case is concerning to me. Obviously, I've got a lot of roots in St. Louis, but this happened as a woman was carjacked at gunpoint and then beaten unconscious in the Bevo Mill section of St. Louis. One of the assailants, who was black, I have to say it, apparently, according to witnesses, told this woman, "You're Bosnian, I should just kill you right now." And I'll tell you, this doesn't make any sense to me. This, to me, if you're trying to get the white community of St. Louis riled up, this is the way to do it. I mean, go after a very tight-knit community like Bosnians. You know, again, St. Louis has got one of the largest collections of Bosnians outside of Bosnia, some of them between 50 and 70,000 people. And again, these guys are not... They're not your typical West County St. Louisite, we'll say that. These guys have actually seen war. They know what it looks like. They've actually seen blood in the streets because they went through an incredible civil war in Yugoslavia. So is somebody paying people who don't know any better to go out and instigate violence against specifically Bosnians now? I can't imagine what else would be causing this. It's one thing for this to play a race card, but when they're looking for specific groups of people now, I start seeing agenda. I see agenda written all over this. But anyway, this lady did not pass away, so she is still in the hospital at this point. But just crazy situation going on in St. Louis right now. It doesn't look like it's going to get any easier over there anytime soon. So that is what's going on in the national news. I am doing my best to move quickly forward here because we've got a lot of economic stuff going on today. Market way down, down 153 points in early trading. There was one, let's see here. Yeah, okay. So what's the big causality of that? Well, crude oil down again almost 4% today, guys, down to $61.55. This is huge. Again, you know, we've talked about that $60 mark being really, really big, but boy, it dropping down again is just, phew, I don't even know. I mean, it's not good. There's another article hosted at redpillreports.com right now. It's talking about the fall of oil and how that is essentially going to cause the junk bond market to collapse. And it's going, I mean, we're there. We're at the precipice of it right now. And, you know, as part of that happens, you can see people jumping back into commodities. They're not jumping into oil because the price is going down. So what do we see? Well, we see a $40 increase in the cost of gold yesterday. Gold jumping all the way to 1230, a little bit higher. It was actually 1244 at some points yesterday. And silver doing the same thing, up to 1715. So despite oil going down and despite the softening of the dollar, people still jumping into gold. And I think that's going to continue for a while. Another economic indicator coming out of Greece. Greece had the worst market collapse they've ever had yesterday. That's not an overstatement. Their Anthex composite, their GD, actually went down almost 13% yesterday. That's the biggest drop for the index on record, according to FactSet. The renewed jitters in the Greece market came after the government, in a surprise move late on Monday, said it would bring forward presidential elections to December 17th, which is potentially setting the scene for snap elections in early in 2015. So this is actually worse than the 9.7% drop the market saw back in October of 2010, which was obviously the peak of the Greek debt worries. And the drop also eclipsed the 10% fall Greek market saw back in 1989 during another bout of political turmoil. So political turmoil, you know, rearing its ugly head in Greece, and their market taking a pretty big dive as a result of it. We'll see what happens today. It's still down about another percent today. The price of gold, as I said, spiked about $44 an ounce yesterday as of midday, which is just unusual because you're seeing let me just read this sentence and then I'll clarify why I think this is ridiculous. The price of gold spiked as much as $44 an ounce on Monday midday trade on the back of another day of selling on equity markets and after finding support from a softer dollar and a stronger oil price. So right in that very first sentence, you realize these people are blowing sunshine up here where the sun doesn't normally shine because we don't see a stronger oil price. We're not going to see a stronger oil price, and that obviously isn't going to, if we did see a stronger oil price, result in gold going up in value or people jumping into gold. You know, physical gold, probably the only thing in the world that still follows the laws of supply and demand. So anyway, here's an interesting report from the Telegraph regarding Bank of America and what they see as going to go down here coming up in the future. They go on to say that the OPEC oil cartel doesn't exist anymore. It's essentially meaningless, and they are predicting that oil prices will slump to $50 a barrel over the coming months as market forces shake out the weakest producers. This is, again, according to Bank of America. They say revolutionary changes sweeping the world's energy industry will drive down the price of liquefied natural gas, creating a multi-year glut and a much cheaper source of gas for Europe. This is Francisco Blanch, who is the bank's commodity chief, said OPEC is effectively dissolved after it failed to stabilize prices at its last meeting, and the consequences of this are profound and long-lasting. So Bank of America essentially saying that they see oil falling as low as $50 a barrel. That would be a very, very bad deal for our country, ladies and gentlemen. And if you're not aware of why that would be a bad deal, I would highly recommend going back and listening to some of the economic advisors that we have had on the show over the last few weeks, because there are tons of them, and lots of people understand that once that junk energy bond market starts to go, whew, we're in a lot of trouble. Oh, and another banker death. Yep, this one, 52-year-old Belgian, Greek Tack, who was a private banker for ING. He also managed portfolios for wealthy individuals, has been described as impeccable, sporty, and cared for, and also successful. But he disappeared a month ago, and the appearance of his body off the coast of Ostend is just like all of these other missing bankers and dead bankers and suicided bankers, very, very suspicious. So this guy apparently took off and drove his car into a big body of water. It's a modern car. It was a, what kind of car? I'm just trying to, I only like telling you guys what kind of vehicles these guys are driving or things like that, because some of this stuff we know can be hacked. What kind of car did he have? Yeah, it's probably not important. Anyway, his car was driven into a lake. They found his body. He didn't have his laptop, didn't have any important things with him like he would normally do on a Wednesday, and no indication from anybody around him that he had any kind of turmoil in his life. He was very happy. So there you go. Another one bumped off. Is it suspicious? Yes. Do we have any definitive why it's suspicious type information? No, not really. So how about... Remember when Obama went to stay at Brisbane at the G20 conference for one night? Take a wild guess what that cost us as taxpayers. Nope, you got it wrong. $1.7 million. $1.7 million, you guys, for one night in Brisbane. And I haven't been to Brisbane. It might be spectacular. It might be the most beautiful city in the world. And I there's no way that it could be, because obviously Seattle is the most beautiful city in the world. But $1.7 million. You know why it cost that much? A, it's because he put himself up at the most expensive hotel in Brisbane, which was obviously the Marriott there, $2,500 a night at the Marriott. He also brought 4,096 people with him. 4,096, and his entourage of security guards and assistants. And if you break down the math, at about $420 a night per person per room, $1.732 million for one night in Brisbane. Unbelievable. The audacity of these people is just never lost on me, I'll tell you what. Okay, moving into some tech news right now. This is a really great report that Nancy Scola put together over at Liberty Crier, but it's a report that's looking at the global struggle for internet freedom. And in the global struggle for internet freedom, apparently the internet is losing. And the internet actually took a major hit yesterday. I'll come back to this story in a minute, but Pirate Bay was shut down yesterday, ladies and gentlemen. And for those of you who don't know what the Pirate Bay is, fine. I'm not even going to tell you, because if you don't know, you maybe not want to know. I don't know. But the Pirate Bay has been shut down. This is a portal for torrents. A lot of tech people out there use Pirate Bay to peer-to-peer share information. And the Pirate Bay has always been the biggest and the best in terms of torrents, in terms of torrent sites. And they've been under major, major attack since like 2006. I mean, all of the founders of the site have been in jail. One of them is actually scheduled to get out soon, because he's already been in jail for so long. But they essentially have been coming under the gun, of international investigators because of piracy, you know, copyright laws, movies, TV shows, things like that. And all the founders have been prosecuted. But essentially what happened yesterday was that the servers got raided, the locations of Pirate Bay actually got raided inside of Sweden, and the servers were taken, everything. They've got forensic analysis all going on. Anyway, the Pirate Bay is down, ladies and gentlemen. How long will it be down for? It's been down before, and it's always popped back up in other guises. So we shall see what happens there. I imagine that even if the Pirate Bay does go away, that piracy will still be on the internet. So there are a lot of people looking for replacement places to go for their torrents right now. But man, big, big time internet hit yesterday with the Pirate Bay going down. And then getting back into this global situation, obviously the year 2014 marked the moment that the world turned its attention to writing laws to govern what actually happens on the internet. And according to an annual report from a U.S.-based pro-democracy think tank called Freedom House, this has not been a very good thing at all. So traditionally, countries are pretty eager to crack down on their online critics, largely resorting to blocking websites and filtering internet content, with the official offline harassment of, with the occasional offline harassment of dissidents as well. But that has changed in part because online activists have gotten better at figuring out ways around those restrictions. Freedom House points out Greatfire, which is a service that takes content blocked in mainland China and hosts it on big global platforms like Amazon servers, and the Chinese government has found it both politically and technologically very difficult to block those things. So as activists have stepped up their efforts to get around the global, censorship of the internet, the internet and the global censors, well, they're fighting back now. So in the wake of these tactics, repressive regimes have begun opting for technically uncensored internet, Freedom House finds, but one that is increasingly controlled by national laws about what you can and can't do online. In 36 of the 65 countries surveyed from around the world, the state of the internet freedom declined in 2014, according to this report. In one example, Russia passed a law that allows the country's prosecutor general to block quote-unquote extremist websites without any judicial oversight. Kazakhstan passed a similar law. Vietnam placed decrees cracking down on any critiques of the state on social media sites. And Nigeria placed a law requiring that internet cafes keep logs of the customers who come into and out of their shops and use their computers. I think that's important in Nigeria because I keep getting these emails from some guy I think who's supposed to be a prince over there, and he's trying to send me money. And I've just been waiting for this check, and it hasn't gotten here. Anyway, so maybe it's important that in that particular geographic area that they tune down on that just a little bit. Okay, Facebook right now, it's got upcoming artificial intelligence to mediate your online activity. So I'm sure the last time you posted on Facebook, you were thinking to yourself, man, I really wish there was some kind of intelligent robotic component to this website that would make sure that this post doesn't come back to haunt me later, right? No, you guys weren't thinking that? Well, too bad, because that's what Facebook is going to do anyway. They are building an artificial intelligence program that will serve as a social media assistant, which is kind of like Clippy. Remember the old obnoxious Microsoft Office bot? Except their version at Facebook is going to be more intelligent and probably more invasive. According to a Wired profile of the head of Facebook AI Lab, which is his name is Yann LeCun, he says the new program will, quote-unquote, mediate your interaction with your friends and do things like shame you from posting pictures of illicit activities. So it's essentially going to be an assistant that will tap you on the shoulder and say, you know, this is going to be publicly posted. Are you sure you want your boss and your mom to see this? Which, you know, I don't know. Maybe that's a good thing. Maybe people aren't capable of making decisions for themselves, and maybe those people shouldn't be on the internet anyway. But for anyone who's worried about artificial intelligence, looking in Elon Musk's general direction, just know that what Facebook is developing does not even hold a candle to the deep learning apparatus that Google has built since acquiring DeepMind Technologies. So all we can really do at this point, ladies and gentlemen, is hope and pray that our robot overlords, once that we have given them full access to our Facebook profiles, we hope that they don't hate engagement announcements and baby photos and kitten photos nearly as much as I might, and because that would obviously result in them planning to eradicate us all. So hopefully Facebook's AI won't result in that. Good times. Okay, China opening up 32 new high-speed rail routes in a grand expansion. They launched 32 new high-speed train routes on the 10th of December. This network extension includes a link between the biggest city, Shanghai, and the manufacturing hub right next to Hong Kong. It is an 1,160-mile route, cuts the journey time down from 6 hours to 6 hours instead of the 16 hours that it normally took. And the new bullet trains. New bullet train lines are part of the government's plan to double the size of the domestic rail network. I forget, how many high-speed rail programs do we have in America? None, right? I remember. They have the best high-speed network system in the world in China. That's great. That's great. Cyber espionage predicted to worsen in 2015, according to new experts, bliggity blah. It's funny because it's actually McAfee that wrote this article. So McAfee obviously sells, threat protection through their McAfee lab. So of course, you know, McAfee's going to come out and say, oh, we're all going to die and it's all going to happen on the internet. So anyway, moving away from that particular story, I want to get into some health news here quickly before I decide that I cannot. There's a story about Ebola coming from Reuters right now. More healthcare workers needed to tackle the spread of Ebola, which apparently is still spreading quickly in the western Sierra Leone and deep in the forested interior of Guinea, according to a senior official on Tuesday, senior official from the UN on Tuesday. So Ebola is still in the news there. A report from the New York Times suggesting that half of the doctors listed as serving Medicaid patients are unavailable, and according, this is an investigation done, as I said, by the New York Times. Many of the doctors that are that were not accepting new Medicaid patients could not be found at their last known address. So about half of the doctors out there that are supposed to be taking Medicare, not really doing it. I also wanted to stop for just a sec because we're just about out of time, man. Go check out redpillreports.com, guys. Get into the news section from today because there's so many stories. There's a story on from InfoWars about a new harmless herbicide that is going to compete with Monsanto's Roundup. This looks absolutely amazing. Cannot commend this company, which is called Weeding Tech, and the product is called Foam Stream. Really, really cool stuff there in tech news and in health news. So definitely want to go check that out. But I also, in the daily news section, here's something I always like to do, is try and put at least one story down at the bottom to make people smile. And today was no exception. I found this fantastic video, ladies and gentlemen. And it is what essentially happens when a state patrol officer who is not on duty is being victimized by someone who's trying to trying to repossess his car. So what happens in this video? And you got to see this. This is just absolutely hilarious. You've got a state trooper at his home. Repo guy shows up to repossess his vehicle because that's what a repo guy does. And state trooper freaks out and starts making what I can only classify as a series of very poor decisions, and hilarity ensues. So if you get an opportunity to go to the show section from today, I would definitely recommend checking out that bottom link, which is under the featured video. It is entertaining. I'll just leave it at that. It is entertaining. And I wanted to just mention that before I get back into some health news here real quick. There's a great article from Natural Society talking about the truth of drugs like Tylenol, acetaminophen, and things like that. It outlines some latest findings that were published this year in the JAMA Pediatrics, that acetaminophen, which is also known as paracetamol, the active ingredient in Tylenol, may raise the risk of attention deficit hyperactive disorder, or ADHD, behavior problems, or hyperkinetic disorders by up to 40% in children when mothers took those drugs during pregnancy. And that's a pretty big deal because the spread of ADHD right now is absolutely astronomical. It's used to be that I think 80% of the ADHD cases were here in America, and we had an article just the other day suggesting that that number has kind of tuned down a little bit, but it has blown up overseas. You got the EU is jumped up quite a bit, and the UK also. So very important information about acetaminophen, not nearly as safe as the prevalent placement on the shelves at the store would have us believe. So more health news to cover there, guys. Check it out on the website today. We're going to have to take a quick 3-minute break. And when we come back, we're going to have Rick Rozoff on, and we're going to be talking about NATO, Ukraine, Crimea, Russia, ISIS, money, gold, everything. It's going to be real in-depth. But I promise you will have a better idea of what is going on with NATO and the Ukraine when we are finished with this hour. That I absolutely assure you. So please keep it right here, guys. This is your Daily Dose of Deprogramming. My name is JD, and we'll be right back with Mr. Rick Rozoff. Keep it right here, guys.
Haven't you always wanted your very own Truth Frequency Radio bumper sticker? To get the word out about the fastest growing news talk outlet in the independent media? Joe Joseph here for TruthFrequencyRadio.com. KTFRN and LibertyStickers.com have teamed up to give you your very own Truth Frequency Radio bumper sticker. For free! Just go to TruthFrequencyRadio.com/stickers today. And don't forget to visit our friends at libertystickers.com, home of the world's most dangerous bumper stickers. Their vast selection and quality of stickers are second to none. TruthFrequencyRadio.com, because silence is consent.
Judith Baker was once a promising science student who dreamed of finding a cure for cancer. This exposé is an account of how she strayed from a path of mainstream scholarship to a life of espionage in New Orleans with Lee Harvey Oswald. In her narrative, she offers extensive documentation on how she came to be a cancer expert and what led to her involvement in the development of a biological weapon that Oswald was to smuggle into Cuba to eliminate Fidel Castro. Details on what she knew of Kennedy's impending assassination and her belief that Oswald was a deep cover intelligence agent who was framed for an assassination he was actually trying to prevent are also revealed. Me and Lee, by Judith Baker. Special JFK 50th Anniversary Signed Limited Edition. $30 including shipping. Limited number of these available. Order your copy today at federaljack.com/store.
Sure am glad I tried that new Iodine Now microplant powder formulation.
You liked it, huh? I told you it would change your life.
Yeah, I feel fantastic and I have so much more energy.
Hi, I have your Iodine Now delivery.
Oh, yes, my second order arrived. Thank you so much.
Hey, buddy, why don't you ask this lady out for a date?
Good idea. Now that I'm taking iodine now, I have the energy to enjoy my life again.
It looks like you're getting back your old charm, buddy.
I'd love to go out to dinner with you. And can I try some of the iodine now?
Of course you can. You just delivered me a 1-year supply.
Your future looks really great.
I finally agree with you.
Iodine Now, part of the Micro Plant Powder family. Micro Plant Powder is available in 15 different formulations. Call 888-910-4367 or visit the website to find the one that's right for you. And listen to our new audio descriptions for every product only at MUSA.org.
Real people, real radio.
Initiating the Truth Frequency.
This is Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for sticking with us through that 3-minute break. It is right now, straight up, 11 o'clock Central Time, and we are live like we are every day, Monday through Friday, and moving into the second hour of our broadcast today. And in the second hour of all of our broadcasts, we always like to try and get the best guests in the world to come and explain to us what is going on this crazy rock as we tumble around the sun here. And today is obviously no exception. Very, very excited to welcome the one and only Rick Rozoff to the show today. Rick Rozoff lives and works in Chicago. He's been an active opponent of war, militarism, and intervention for well over 40 years now. He also manages the Stop NATO email list, which you can find at groups.yahoo.com, at group Stop NATO, or you can just do a quick search for Stop NATO. You'll be able to find his site there. His website also is rickrozoff.wordpress.com. And there he writes on the threat of international militarization and especially on the globalization of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. And so whenever I have questions in my own personal life about what in the world is going on over in the Ukraine or with NATO or, you know, AFRICOM, all this craziness that's going on, Rick Rozoff is the top of my list in terms of who I go to get actual, succinct, real information. And so it is in that vein that I thank you, Rick, for being with us on the Red Pill Reports radio broadcast today.
Well, thank you, JD, for having me and for those generous and more than generous words. I appreciate them. You know, it's a sort of honor that's bestowed upon a person and makes them want to rise to the level of what they've been described as being. And I'll certainly, you know, do so in our show or attempt to.
Well, I'm not worried about it at all. You always astound me with the information that you've got. I'm hoping that you won't stump me with any tough questions today, to be honest. But so I want to just kind of start from square one. You're a new guest. We have a new audience, and a lot of people may not know about you. So is there anything else in your background that you want to kind of get on the table in terms of why it is that you got so active in opposing NATO?
You know, I just turned 62 years of age last month, and like everyone, you know, our individual lives in very many ways are reflective of, you know, the period we lived in or live in. And I'm somebody who was born, say, during the waning days of the Korean War. Mm-hmm. Was somebody whose formative years were shaped in many ways by the you know, if we are in the least bit receptive to and reflective of the life around us, then we have to take a certain amount of that external life into ourselves and to give back, you know, our impressions on it. So I am the child of my age. I'm a child of the century, to quote the title of the book by Musset in France after the Napoleonic Wars. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in that sense, I mean, I'm somebody who was both conditioned by and, you know, made decisions based upon the historical developments in my age. I'm somebody who was raised, you know, during the Cold War. I can remember nuclear air raid, or nuclear drills, people building bomb shelters. I can remember very vividly being forced onto my knees with a brother of mine by my mother during the Cuban Missile Crisis. Mm-hmm. You know, all of those things form one's character and sensibilities, and I'm sure they did, you know, with me. So when we talk about combating militarism or you know, the threat of not only regional wars, but, you know, ultimately world war, even nuclear war, an issue that is spoken of much more in the last 12 months, as you know, and your listeners know, JD, than has probably been spoken about in the last 30 or 40 years. It's something that we have to prioritize because it is the most vital threat confronting the human race.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would agree with that, and I'm glad that you brought up, you know, your long memory, because that's essentially one of the things about you that I like the most is that, you know, none of what's going on in the Ukraine right now just happened. You know, no history exists in a vacuum. And I think that if you're following the mainstream media, you know, you might be of the opinion that, what set this whole thing off in the Ukraine was the annexation of Crimea, you know, in which case, in my opinion, you would be very, very wrong because there were a lot of incidents that led up to this event. Am I correct?
Yeah, you're absolutely right about that. Or you might have somebody I know in Canada who stated once, you know, comically but accurately, that nothing happens by accident except in the movies, and he might have added bad movies. You know, where the plausibility or the verisimilitude or, you know, sacrifice to the benefit of sensationalism and right. know, attracting attention and such like. So that we know that, you know, I mean, there are forces of nature, natural events that certainly aren't, you know, could not be foretold. But when you talk about human agency, nothing entirely happens by accident or fortuitously.
No.
It's either the realization of a project or a plan that's been in the works or some variation thereof. I mean, there are variables, but we know the basic plan.
Well, and the bottom line is if it was going to be an accidental nature, once in a while they would make a mistake on our behalf, and that never happens. I mean,
there you go.
That's really it.
Yeah, if a felix culpa, you know, a fortunate accident or fortunate, you know, what would otherwise be an misfortune were to occur, yeah, then you could believe in fortuity. But as it's uniformly bad, one has to assume there's, you know, certain iron logic behind these events. I agree with you. Mm-hmm. But, you know, to talk about the Ukraine, you and I have casually discussed, you know, off air, the fact that Ukraine has been marked for full NATO integration, that is, as a full member of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, really since the breakup of the Soviet Union and its emergence as an independent country, Ukraine, that is, in 1991. I mean, you know, from the very beginning, Ukraine was the first country that entered a post-Cold War NATO military partnership program called Partnership for Peace. That's an Orwellian inversion of its true purpose.
They always are.
Yeah, aren't they? But it was the first nation within the, you know, from the former Soviet bloc, rather, that was incorporated into that program. The Partnership for Peace is the transitional program that's been used by the Pentagon and by NATO to elevate 12 Eastern European nations into full NATO membership in the decade between 1999 and 2009. All 12 of those nations, of course, are in Eastern Europe, from the Baltic Sea to the Black Sea, with the exception of Croatia and Slovenia. They were all, at one time or another, members of the Warsaw Pact. Eliciting at one point a comment, if I'm not mistaken, by President George W. Bush, who said the Warsaw Pact is now NATO, after the 2004 NATO summit in Istanbul, Turkey, that brought 7 Eastern European countries into NATO at one time. That's, of course, the largest expansion in NATO's history since 1949. And it's led to, you know, that the decade I've talked about from 1999 to 2009, 75% increase in the membership of a U.S.-led Cold War military bloc that, of course, should have been dissolved in 1991 when the Warsaw Pact was dissolved and the Soviet Union fragmented into 15 independent countries. Mm-hmm.
So in this Partnership for Peace, as you describe it, is kind of their transitional, we're bringing you into the fold sort of program that they have. And so is Ukraine right now currently kind of in that waiting hold pattern right now?
Even more than that, and this is a fascinating history because, in a sense, there are 4 nations in Europe that have been, placed together. The U.S. likes, and NATO likes to incorporate countries en bloc, oftentimes as in pairs. So, for example, it was announced, this is before the overthrow of the Viktor Yanukovych government. We're not told that he was, you know, Russian puppet and such like. He was the most accommodating Ukrainian head of state vis-a-vis the U.S. and NATO since, you know, the emergence again of Ukraine as a independent country. He was the 4th president.
Okay.
And what he did was he offered the first military vessel of an he was the first non-NATO nation to offer naval vessels for NATO's permanent. I don't know how many of your listeners know about this permanent surveillance and interdiction maritime operation in the Mediterranean Sea called Operation Active Endeavor, which has been running now for over 13 years. That is, the entire Mediterranean Sea is patrolled by NATO military vessels.
I don't think anybody knew that. I wouldn't know that. That's crazy. Well,
yeah, you cannot enter through the Straits of Gibraltar or the Straits of Dardanelles or the Suez Canal without NATO warships monitoring you, boarding you, confiscating, goods and so forth. This is, this is a naval blockade of the entire Mediterranean Sea. The Yanukovych government, again, the former government that is now portrayed to us as being, serving Russian interests and so forth, was the first non-NATO country to provide a vessel for that operation. NATO subsequently set up a second permanent naval operation in the Arabian Sea off the Horn of Africa called Ocean Shield, Operation Ocean Shield. Right. Ukraine again became the first non-NATO country to supply a warship for that operation. It was then announced that the now rapidly developing NATO response force, which is nothing less than a global strike force, that that four non-NATO members were going to participate. This is, before the regime change in Ukraine in February of this year. Those four countries were Ukraine, Georgia, Finland, and Sweden. Ukraine and Georgia are the sort of pair I'm talking about that are going to be brought into NATO simultaneously, or at least that's the intent. Finland and Sweden, again, will be brought in simultaneously into NATO. Presumably Georgia and Azerbaijan, or perhaps even Georgia, Azerbaijan, and Armenia simultaneously. This is the way the NATO's operated in the post-Cold War period. Mm-hmm.
Well, and I know I asked you a question yesterday because, to me, there's just so many players in this field right now. And then you add ISIS into the mix, and my head just wants to explode because, I see so many different strange bedfellows and uncomfortable alliances that are having to be made because there are so many people that are, you've got the ISIS situation, you've got this Ukraine situation, then you've obviously everybody wants to keep economics and politics separate. So, I guess the question that I've got is, are there people who are both EU members and NATO members who are starting to kind of get to a position where, they're being pulled by NATO in one direction and maybe being pulled by the EU in another direction and may even then on a third note have trade alliances with Russia? And, I guess I'm looking in Germany's general direction when I'm asking this question, but are we starting to see some infighting? Is it as complicated as I think it is, or is it as not as complicated as I think it is?
I wish you were right. I'm afraid that's not the case. And I think that perhaps the most insidious misconception of the entire post-Cold War period, one of the many, but maybe ultimately the most important, is that somehow the European Union represents an independent Europe vis-a-vis the United States, and that it's asserting a independent foreign policy that breaks away, at least in terms of Western and most of Southern Europe, from its former subservience to the U.S. State Department and Pentagon. Nothing could be further from the truth. Just yesterday, again, Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov was compelled to upbraid the German political leadership, Chancellor Angela Merkel, in the first instance, for what is almost on a daily basis progressively more shrill and condemnatory statements by Germany vis-a-vis Russia. We have to keep in mind for a long time there's been the illusion that somehow Germany, going back to the Gerhard Schröder government, was Russia's key ally in Europe. I think the opposite is now being demonstrated. And we have to recall that Germany as an EU member is no other country than Germany as a NATO member. And this pertains to the 22 nations that are simultaneously in the European Union, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. To believe for a moment that a nation like France or Belgium or Italy or Britain has a different foreign policy when it wears the hat of the European Union than it does when it wears the hat of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization is a very dangerous misconception, and it really needs to be laid to rest.
Well, and I want to lay it to rest, and that's why I asked the question. But, you know, my mind is still being drawn to, like, Turkey right now comes up to the, you know, they're obviously a NATO country, but they supposedly, according to some German media sources, they've had their border open, and they are allowing, you know, jihadists to go and join the ISIS organization. So I'm trying to figure out then if Turkey being involved with NATO means that their, you know, their foreign policy is effectively set by the EU, then why would the EU sort of underhandedly be wanting to support ISIS? Am I missing something here?
No, Turkey is not a member of the European Union. It is a member of NATO. In that sense, it's analogous to Norway, you know, Canada and the United States. Canada and the United States because they're in North America, obviously. Norway right. Because the people have not yet been controlled or strong-armed into joining the European Union, which is not a pleasant sensation. I mean, ask the people of Ireland, Italy, Spain, Portugal, and Greece, you know, what European Union membership means. No, what's happened when one European Union country currently, Hungary, also NATO member, and one European Union aspirant, Serbia, decide years ago to participate in a Russian natural gas pipeline, the South Stream project, and are now told that, you know, Russia is now forced to back out of that because the U.S. has exerted pressure on the key transit country, Bulgaria, to pull out of the arrangement, which was, you know, distressingly predictable.
Right.
You know, a few years ago, Russia was going to build at least one nuclear power plant in Belin in Bulgaria. And as I recollect, you know, reading the mainstream Bulgarian press in the English language, where the U.S. ambassador comes out, you know, by fiat and just tells the Ukrainian, I mean, the Bulgarian puppet regime to pull out. And I am certain this is exactly what the United States did with the government in Sofia vis-a-vis the South Stream project and with any other European government it wants to dictate terms to, particularly those in Eastern Europe. These are nothing other than satrapies of the United States. And the European Union is simply another mechanism by which the United States entraps these countries into pursuing, you know, a unilateral pro-U.S., pro-Western, pro-NATO, not only military policy and foreign policy, but a political orientation, economic policy, energy strategy, and so forth is all subordinated to Washington. NATO, in the military realm, the EU and every other, is what the United States employs to do that. In terms of ISIS or ISIL, we have to recall that the North Atlantic Treaty Organization sent, you know, batteries of Patriot Advanced Capability 3, that is comparatively long-range interceptor missiles, to Turkey, near the border not only with Syria but with Iran and Iraq, and that the initial batteries were U.S., Dutch, and German. And that, you know, Holland and the Netherlands and Germany are both members of the European Union. They're also both members of NATO. And again, it doesn't make any difference. They're one and the same for all intents and purposes. You know, I brought up to you yesterday, but I think your listeners may want to know, that in many cases, under a program called Berlin Plus that was initiated in the 1990s, that essentially led to the military merger of the European Union and the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. It initially permitted EU countries or the European Union as a whole to share NATO facilities, equipment, commanders. And we've seen most recently where up until a few months ago, it's always British, but the deputy military commander of NATO you know, altogether subordinate to an American, of course, now Breedlove, Philip Breedlove, a fellow named Richard Sheriff, was simultaneously in command of the European Union's first naval operation, which is a complement to the one I just mentioned of you know, NATO in the off the Horn of Africa.
Right. Okay.
NATO has Ocean Shield, and European Union has Operation Atalanta. Well, the commander of that was the very sheriff who simultaneously was the second top military commander of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. So to suggest for a moment that either Britain as a EU and NATO member or the EU and NATO pursue in any way dissimilar objectives is simply not accurate. They are one and the same.
Okay. Well, that makes sense then. But so essentially what we're describing, though, in terms of the situation in Ukraine, is a proxy war, and you could also define it really as a war of attrition at this point, could you not?
That's a very accurate summation. That's precisely what it is. It's a proxy war, and it has been since the infamous Victoria Nuland, about whom you and I have spoken, you know, several times, very endearingly, of course, yes. You know, since February of this year. By the way, I should mention, you know, her handpicked Quisling, a puppet in Kiev, Yatsenyuk, just yesterday, you know, threw down the gauntlet and just basically said, look, you know, the non-bloc, that is non-military bloc status that Ukraine had adopted during the Yanukovych years has now been scrapped. And in his own words, the Ukrainian military will be organized according to NATO standards. So that even if Ukraine does not formally join NATO at this point, the fact that its army is a NATO army, you know, is perfectly the sort of proxy element or dynamic that you've just remarked. The war of attrition, I think, is important, too. Just yesterday, one of the English-language Ukrainian news services, I believe it's Interfax Ukraine, you know, announced rather matter-of-factly, and this may be an underestimate, a low-end estimate, that 192 Ukrainian government soldiers have been killed since the ceasefire was signed on September the 5th. Okay. Heaven knows how many civilians in southeastern Ukraine have been killed in that same period. So that what you have is, as you say, a slow growth. Grinding, inexorable war of attrition going on in Ukraine. That has been going on, by the way, now.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, what's important for me to try and point out, too, is that there seems to be a reason, and I can't really put my finger on it, as to why these people are over there being victimized in a way that nobody in the world seems to care about this. You know, nobody. We've got over a million people who have been displaced from eastern Ukraine and been bumped over into Russia at this point. And, you know, that is such a travesty at this point. You know, we're talking about some of the details of the incidents that have gone on over there in Ukraine. We're talking about a million people displaced. We've had talk about several thousand, if not, I think the number is somewhere around 7,000 civilians killed, most of which innocent people, women, children, families, things like that. The Ukrainian government has come out and said that the gold reserves are gone, right? So we know that somehow something happened to remove their gold reserves. So you could say ostensibly that their gold was stolen. And then you've got half the country now without power, without services. Why is it so difficult to get people riled up about this? Is it just because these people are, you know, and I hate to say it, is it because they're white people who are just like us, that they don't want the media exposure to what's actually going on over there?
That's an intriguing question, and I think, you know, there are probably several different facets of an answer to it. I think that, in a sense, yes, over the past decades, what there is of an anti-war movement, and let's all be perfectly candid about this, it is woefully inadequate, and
yes.
it's a moral indictment of people that they're more concerned about their iPad or their
yes.
smartphone or their video games than they are about what's going on.
Yeah, the word pitiful comes to mind.
Yeah, pitiful, narcissistic, almost, you know, to the point of being solipsistic. And this is, you know, something that needs to be addressed on a political and on an ethical level. I mean, we're not just talking about, you know, people don't agree with us politically and we're writing them off. It's not that at all. It's that they don't care.
Right.
That, you know, what's occurring in the world, you know, I can remember my father, who had only a high school education, would the newspaper, and the news was fairly serious at that point, I might add, and would read it religiously and listen to news programs and was well versed in what was going on in the world, even though he was working full time and had a family and had other, you know, constraints. Whereas now, people who have access to information that was inconceivable, you know, a cornucopia of information through the internet and so forth, are far less informed about world events than they were 40 or 50 years ago. That is, to use your word, a travesty. It's also a tragedy.
I agree. I wanted to talk for a second. We were talking about the Ukraine kind of working in a pair with Georgia and getting ready to potentially enter into NATO. And one of the things that I had read last week was saying, Something, I think it was Poroshenko himself saying, you know, we're going to have a referendum to join NATO officially as soon as we meet the criteria. And then in that same article, there was a spokesman from NATO who essentially said, we don't really have any criteria, so we don't really know what that guy is talking about. But you straightened me out on that yesterday, because there apparently are some pretty stringent and yet simple requirements to join NATO. Is that correct?
I'm glad you raised that issue. You're correct. You know, by the way, we should also mention something you brought up to me yesterday, that the new U.S.-ordered junta in Kiev, if you recall, you know, John Kerry and the U.S. Ambassador Pyatt, Jeffrey Pyatt, a couple of weeks ago, you know, telling their servants to get things in line, step lively, and form the coalition government the U.S. had ordered in advance going back to last February. But that three leading cabinet positions are held by foreign nationals now, one U.S. national, one Georgian national, and one Lithuanian. You could only imagine if this were to happen in our country, no?
Though,
you know, it's a subject for a different conversation, but the fact that our foreign policy establishment, in fact, does just that very uniquely in the world, when things are the Kissingers, Brzezinskis, Holyzods, Albrights, and so forth.
Right.
How to, you know, to run the empire on behalf of their homelands oftentimes. But that, you know, that this intrusion, and this is by the way, by this government that talks about the national pride and sovereignty and you know, inviolability and so forth of his nation, you know, which would be laughable. It wasn't so tragic.
Exactly.
But we also have to recollect that during the 5-day war, what's referred to the 888 war between Georgia and Russia in, 6 years ago, because it began on August the 8th of 2008, that there were reports of the Ukrainian government at that time, you know, Mr. Orange Revolution, Viktor Yushchenko, sending special forces and other Ukrainian, you know, armed personnel to fight along with the Georgians against Russia. So in a sense, there's already been a war.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yes, and that Ukraine threatened, because it controlling Crimea at the time, it controlled the, you know, the ingress and egress of Russian ships from the Russian Black Sea fleet in Crimea into the Black Sea, where, you know, during the war with Georgia, it was important for Russia, obviously, to have a naval presence off the coast of particularly Abkhazia, which was a breakaway region supported by Russia, which Georgia could have attacked with U.S. support at any point, and that Ukraine was basically threatening to disallow the Russian ships to return to the Black Sea fleet headquarters in Crimea. So, you know, a lot of this is more complex. What the order from Ms. Nuland and company and Pyatt and Kerry you know, the foreign policy establishment of the United States wanted to ensure, starting with the riots that began in Ukraine, in Kiev, in November of 13 months ago. Mm-hmm. Incidentally, around the fact that the government of Viktor Yanukovych initially simply demurred in signing an association agreement with the European Union under a program called Eastern Partnership. So, which had a very strong military component and so forth. So this whole crisis erupted, at least nominally, because the Ukrainian government wouldn't cave into a demand by the European Union, and which I think we should recall. But, you know, what happened was the U.S. clearly had been pushing to have the Russian Black Sea fleet evicted from Crimea,
right,
and they wanted a Ukrainian government that would do that.
Okay.
No, they haven't.
Rick, we got to take a quick 3-minute break. I hate to interrupt you, but this is fascinating stuff, and I'm really glad that you're here today. So we're going to take a 3-minute break. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be right back with Rick Rozoff. RickRozoff.wordpress.com, ladies and gentlemen.
So, you want the news and information without the hate, the hype, the fear? Well, you've come to the right place. You can support Truth Frequency Radio by spreading the word on social networking sites like Facebook, Twitter, or your favorite forums. Want to take Truth Frequency Radio on the road? Listen on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or other mobile devices. Want more than just the free stuff? Sign up for a VIP membership for as little as $4 a month and get super high-quality downloads, member-only content, and instant access to your favorite shows without the wait. It's only through your loving support that we're able to cover the cost and continue broadcasting. So now, stay tuned for more Free Speech Radio right here on the Truth Frequency Radio Network. KTFRA. Worldwide.
time and time again.
You need to come here and help us. We need assistance, please.
Those we should be able to depend on let us down.
Federal and state and local officials saying help is on the way. Well, the folks here in Bell Harbor say show me.
Don't depend on the government to save you. Take action now so that you're prepared for the next disaster with MyPatriotSupply.com. Get the best prices on storable food, non-GMO seeds, water filtration devices, home canning equipment, survival and self-reliance books, and more at MyPatriotSupply.com. Call 866-229-0927.
We are hurting down here, and we need help immediately.
Before it's time to survive, it's time to prepare. MyPatriotSupply.com. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Since our founding in 2005, we at YouTube have continually strived to bring you the best possible video experience on the internet. But now, we're updating YouTube to make it even better and give our users more of what they want. Introducing YouTube Plus, the new and improved version of YouTube. We're bringing a whole bunch of great new additions to YouTube. First of all, we're leveling the playing field by entirely removing subscriptions. You know how we've been phasing out subscriptions and making them less and less important by taking them off your home screen? Well, now subscriptions are non-existent. Everyone is equal. YouTubers that put in hours and hours of effort to make quality videos will be at the same level as 12-year-old Call of Duty gamers and video bloggers. Now you might be asking, how do I know what to watch now? Well, now your home screen is going to be filled with videos we think you'll like. Did you accidentally click on a My Little Pony video once? Well, now your home screen is going to be filled with videos just like that.
YouTube Plus. We owe 99% of the content creators.
The brother's gonna work it out.
Staunching tyranny with Jim and Jeff Staunch.
Monday on Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. It is right now, bottom of the second hour, and we are knee-deep in a discussion with Mr. Rick Rozoff, talking about NATO, militarization of the world, talking about Ukraine, things like that. And Rick, you know, listening to some of the things that you said in the last segment, something really stood out to me is that the history of collusion involving some of these countries in or out of NATO is pretty astounding. I mean, you talking about the Ukraine essentially is supporting Georgia back in 08. I mean, that we're talking about well before you know, any type of I want to say non-governmental organization trying to destroy the Ukraine at that point. So the history of the collusion is really astounding to me. And that also makes me want to ask about these cabinet posts. You know, watching this whole thing go down, where initially they brought in Biden's son to work for the natural gas supplier there in the Ukraine, and then they've now brought in the American, I think she was a central banker, if I'm not mistaken, as a finance director there. Is that par for the course? Is that something that we see, you know, in the development of all of these countries as they're brought into the fold? Is it like the parasite, you know, that latches on, and all of a sudden now we're just like seeing the injections of ridiculousness happening as they get taken over?
A very good question, and the answer briefly is yes, but if I may, I forget, you know, my high school biology. I think there's a difference between a parasite and a saprocyte or something.
Right.
You know, one feeds off the host without killing it, and the other feeds off the host and kills it.
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking about the second in any instance. When you mentioned earlier, and I'm sorry I'm a little tardy in responding to what the preconditions are for NATO membership, and they do exist, and NATO's usually very firm about them. The most immediate and the most stark are the following two. That a country, in order to become a full member of NATO, needs to have to eliminate any armed, any territorial disputes or armed conflicts on its soil, and number two, to have no foreign troops on its territory. That's, you know, two standard. The first means, in the current context, we have to Ukraine is also a member of a group that the United States set up in the 1990s, known by its acronym, that is first letters of each nation, as Guam, as in the island of Guam in the South Pacific, but capitals. Okay. And they are Georgia, Ukraine, Azerbaijan, and Moldova. All four of those countries had so-called frozen conflicts in the Soviet Union, in former Soviet space. Three of them formally, Georgia with Abkhazia and South Ossetia, Eastern Azerbaijan with Nagorno-Karabakh, but as I've argued for a long time, Crimea was in effect the fifth frozen conflict because it had not been it had autonomous status within Ukraine and was not completely subordinate to Kiev. Okay. So that for Georgia or Ukraine to have entered NATO or to enter NATO in some future point, they will have had to resolve those territorial conflicts, number one. Mm-hmm. Number two, by foreign troops, let's be honest, they mean non-NATO nations' troops. So the fact that there are Russian peacekeepers in Transdniester, Abkhazia, South Ossetia automatically means those troops have to be evicted. They can be evicted peacefully or they can be evicted in an armed conflict. And what happened in August of 2008, as I alluded to, was the Georgian military immediately after being promised eventual NATO membership at the Bucharest NATO summit earlier that year, invaded South Ossetia, provoked a war with Russia with a clear intent of resolving both of those obstacles to NATO membership simultaneously. Number one, to subjugate the two breakaway republics of South Ossetia and then later Abkhazia, drive Russian peacekeepers out of both of those former autonomous republics, and then present themselves as with the ribbon around their neck, prepared to enter NATO. That's number one. The same thing with Ukraine. Ukraine had to, basically revoke autonomous status for Crimea, evict the Russian Black Sea fleet from Crimea, and then it was ready to join NATO. The Guam mechanism was originally set up for energy transit, and this makes it all the more pertinent right now. That is that Caspian Sea oil and natural gas was to flow from as far east as Kazakhstan, which borders China as well as Russia, either under, across, or through the Caspian Sea to Azerbaijan, where, and in the last few years, we've seen the realization of some of these projects. What in 1994 was referred to as the deal of the century. When the U.S. fragmentation of the Soviet Union had barely been completed when the U.S. immediately went to work, subjugating former Soviet republics in an attempt, successful largely, to wrest them from Russia. Mm-hmm. And with Azerbaijan, it was a set up major oil and natural gas pipelines from the Caspian Sea through Azerbaijan, Georgia to Turkey, from Turkey into the Balkans, ultimately throughout Europe, to exclude, let's be perfectly clear about this, exclude Russia entirely from the energy market in Europe. Nuclear, natural gas, and oil. That has almost been accomplished, and it took the pretext of the Ukrainian crisis to really bring this to a head.
Wow, so you're essentially saying then that the goal for all of this, for every single aspect of the things that we're seeing over there right now, has essentially been to isolate Russia from the rest of Europe. And we actually, looking at the situation, it seems like we're pretty close to that right now.
That's right. The U.S. wants to supplant Russia as the major energy supplier for Europe, directly or indirectly. Hmm. There has been a lot of discussion. You're right about Hunter Biden going in there. This is the son of the vice president of the United States, who, in my book, is the gray eminence in the White House.
Yes.
I can't believe for a moment that he... political fledgling like Obama in January 2009 could elaborate a foreign policy in particular without Mr. Biden looking over his shoulder and dictating terms. Nor do I believe that Barack Obama chose Joseph Biden as his running mate in the election in 2008, but somebody who's in the U.S. Senate for 36 years.
Right.
And what we're talking about then is that the U.S. either wants to, through shale oil, and you brought up very perceptively last night the fact U.S. is working at cross purposes with itself in one respect, and that by conspiring with its Saudi ally to have oil prices plummet from 100 to, you mentioned last night, $63 a barrel in an attempt to bankrupt Russia, and they're well on their way to doing that. The ruble is plunging, in relation to that drop in oil prices. But at the same time, that if the U.S. cannot by bringing down oil prices, it makes fracking cost ineffective, as you remarked, and you're correct. Mm-hmm. But what the U.S. cannot do directly, it has been working on since the deal of the century 20 years ago to do indirectly, which is to say, the U.S. has been working
looking to provide a gas, a natural gas and oil, not only from the Caspian Sea basin, but from Iraq, particularly northern Iraq, Egypt, Algeria, and what it was to have been a very elaborate nexus of oil, natural gas supply routes that would supply, and Libya, I need hardly mention if anyone doesn't know why the onslaught against Libya three and a half years ago occurred, in an attempt to have the U.S. with its hand firmly on the world energy spigot to determine. To have your energy supplied by the United States. So I think it's the height of almost grotesque hypocrisy for the United States to currently say, when it's torpedoing a Russian natural gas pipeline plant like South Stream in the Balkans and Eastern Europe, or the nuclear power plants in the Balkans and so forth, to say they want countries to be energy independent and to diversify their options, when that's the very last thing in the world the United States wants, and is ensuring that just...
Well, and we're ensuring that exactly the opposite of happens here. You know, if there is substantial evidence to suggest that we did team up with OPEC, like we, you know, you and I talked about yesterday, to suppress the price of oil in an effort to basically kill off the three big threats to OPEC right now, which are Russia, Iran, and Venezuela. I'm looking at the oil price right now. Just right now, we're down another 5% today. It's $60.80. So $60 is a major, major, major milestone here in the United States for our, energy, you know, our energy, sector of our economy, which is really the only thing that we export anymore. So to me, this just seems really crazy that we would team up with OPEC to do something detrimental, to them in hopes that the detrimental effect on us would be less significant. But I can't imagine looking at $60 a barrel in oil that we're not going to see a tremendous effect on the economy here in our country, which again, you know, shows a pretty big cross purpose effort here, in my opinion.
That's a 40% plunge in a few weeks.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not only precipitate, it's catastrophic.
Yes.
And this shows you that, you know, for anyone who's still not convinced of it, that we are in a state of war by other means, mm-hmm. you know, to cite the German strategist Clausewitz. This is a continuation of war by other means. You know, he said that war was a continuation of politics by other means. I think we've reversed that adage. And that thing, once again, to plunge our own populace and the populaces of our allies into an economic downturn and crisis and depression to achieve, international geopolitical objectives. There's no question about that.
Yeah.
And that, you know, your allusion to the three major petroleum exporting countries that had offered any substantive opposition to U.S. global policies and were arguably the three major advocates for the emergence of a new multipolar world order were essentially hampered severely, maybe irreversibly, 6 years ago when the U.S. first drove down oil prices after the collapse of collapse of the housing bubble in the summer of 2008. But I did mention to you last night, and I think your listeners may want to hear this, that roughly in December of 2008, as oil prices continued going down, that almost simultaneously an unsigned editorial in the Wall Street Journal, which is a newspaper of record, particularly to the economic community, and a statement by George Soros, you know, identified inevitably in the Western press as a philanthropist.
That's hilarious, by the way.
in the sense that Mephistopheles would be referred to as a philanthropist. both said exactly the same thing. They said at that time the plunge in petroleum prices would severely constrict the ability of the governments of Russia, Iran, and Venezuela to, you know, in their words, you know, meddle in foreign affairs or something. In my words, to, you know, assert any cry for independence.
Sovereignty, right.
So we have to acknowledge it, not only is it meant to weaken the Russian economy, it's going to impact negatively on Iran, on Venezuela, and in other countries the U.S. would like to do in. Incidentally, by the way, going back to the preconditions for NATO membership, let's not forget, nothing less than slavish subservience is demanded of nations that come into NATO and the European Union. They have to, first of all, be NATO interoperable with their weapon systems. So we you know, in Eastern Europe in particular, where the weapons are either Russian-made or Russian-designed, they have to be scrapped. They have to buy U.S. arms or German or French or English or, revealingly enough, Swedish.
Ooh, that is revealing.
Yeah, Sweden, in my opinion, is the 29th member of NATO and has been for a decade. Finland is perhaps the 30th. One could even argue Israel is the 31st. So that, you know, we have this out with Russian arms, so that the only other export product of any the significance that Russia has, weaponry, is also banned from Europe then, because you have to be, if to be a NATO member or aspirant member, member of any of the NATO transitional partnership programs, you have to buy Western arms. You know, for example, at the beginning of this century, Poland was compelled to buy 48 F-16s. These are warplanes, by the way, capable of carrying nuclear weapons. 48 F-16s in Poland. Guess who they're going to be deployed against? There's only one country. and this is, you know, by far in a way, the largest single arms purchase in the history of Poland, as though they could really afford, you know, coming out of, you know, the breakup of the Warsaw Pact and Comic-Con, they could really afford to make a purchase of that. So they were ordered to do so.
Well, yeah, and I'm sure that they were probably told if they didn't do it, that, you know, or if they did, I'm sure that money was a loan from probably the IMF, right? And it came with it some heavy-duty austerity measures to make sure that that cost was passed on to the population, you know?
That's a very good connection. I wouldn't have thought of that. I'm sure you're right. And, you know, at the time, they were also demanding that Bulgaria and Romania purchase, and these are very impoverished countries and tiny countries, 24 to 36 F-16s apiece. You know, it finally fell through when the economic crisis of 6 years ago set in, which, of course, hit Europe even harder than it hit the United States, with that intent, perhaps.
Right.
And amongst others. So that, you know, these are the preconditions. Oh, they're also political, ideological, and other security and other preconditions for NATO membership. You know, anyone who is viewed as being politically unreliable has to be purged from government. I used Slovak example in the 1990s, where Vladimir Mečiar, who is, I think, if anything, a right of center patriot, you know, had to be gotten rid of because he wasn't going to, you know, give away the store to the United States and Brussels, to Washington and Brussels. So, you know, what you're talking about is complete. I mean, the, you know, the Axis alliance in the 1930s and early 1940s with Nazi Germany, fascist Italy, militarist Japan, and in various capacities, you know, Romania, Finland, and other countries was, you know, in a way far less draconian than what the U.S. has enforced through NATO. We also have to remember, and I've said this before, and I think it's simply indisputable, that during the Cold War period, the Warsaw Pact countries, particularly like Romania, but even to some degree Hungary and Poland, pursued independent foreign policies that would be unthinkable now in Europe.
Really?
Yes.
Such as what?
First of all, none of those countries were asked to supply troops of the, you know, the Soviet military operation in Afghanistan. Every one of them has fought, killed, and, you know, their soldiers fought, killed, and died in Afghanistan on behalf of NATO. Supposedly, Romania, is my recollection, that Ceausescu, the head of state, was the go-between for the Camp David. that he brought together, you know, Israel and the Palestine Liberation Organization with U.S. approval. And they, you know, the some of these countries did not support the Soviet action in Afghanistan, Romania, for example.
Right.
You know, some of them were quite independent in economic and other policies. You know, I'm just raising that to emphasize how, you know, rigid and authoritarian the current regime in Europe is, that even on the, you know, to the east of the Iron Curtain, there was more, you know, you know, as one Russian official mentioned on the anniversary of the Berlin Wall a few years ago, you know, a decade long, or what would it have been at the time, 30-year anniversary, that the Berlin Wall may have been dismantled. It's simply been erected along the entire western frontier of Russia, and that's the truth.
Right. Well, and I think that's what they're ostensibly doing right now. This is because there's not a wall there. We're shutting them down economically on every front. We're shutting them down at a point, you know, where we're gonna be in a conflict with these people, I think. You know, we had that story last week about the army bringing out a whole bunch of their Abram tanks and putting them on the border, and it seems like, the show of force, you know, it's just gonna be more and more prevalent as we go forward until some kind of skirmish eventually erupts on one of the borders there. But you know, I'm intrigued. I guess I'm a little bit, maybe I'm looking for the silver lining here, but, getting back to this idea that, that war goods are going to be the replacement for oil, or energy in our country. Maybe that's, I have to think that these people have made some sort of calculated decisions where they say, okay, we can sacrifice the energy market in our country because our good friends over at Northrop Grumman and at Raytheon, they're going to make a lot of money in Halliburton, if you know what I mean. So, that concerns me, but I guess it makes me think that perhaps the economy won't crash, which I guess could be considered a silver lining in this point. But I also wanted to talk about some of the stuff that's going on in the eastern Ukraine right now, and especially in there was an article today out of RT talking about the central Ukraine region of Vinnytsia and how there has been a lot of protesters just this last weekend. And one of the things that they did is they asked, or they demanded essentially that, Poroshenko's guy left town, and then they asked to have, Olyanyuk they kicked out, and then they wanted to bring in, the guy from the Svoboda Party, Furman.
Yeah.
What is the deal with the Svoboda Party? How does that integrate into, Eastern Ukraine, and what are they going to be the long-term effects of that?
Yeah, you probably know more than I do on this, but I know the background of the Svoboda Party. It's simply the Slavic word, general Slavic word for freedom. But it was formerly known as the National Social Party, as a national socialist, or social national, and perhaps it is. But, you know, close enough to the name of the Nazi Party.
Right.
German National Socialist German Workers Party. And, you know, they have fascistic, leanings. I mean, it's unquestionable. And by the way, this seems not to have, you know, disturbed any of the pristine sensibilities in the West or in Tel Aviv for that matter.
Right.
So I think it's interesting to note that, Israel did not vote with the U.S. in the security, in the National Security Council vote on Crimea. They abstained. Which, I think, you know, is something worth noting. It's not very often that the U.S. and Israel don't vote the same way.
Mm-hmm. It seems to be happening quite a bit more these days, though, doesn't it? There seems to be a little bit of a divide starting now between Israel and the U.S.
There could be, but in questions like Syria and so forth, they seem to be fairly well unified. You know, when you mentioned the fact of war, and I just didn't want to forget this because it was posted today on the Stars and Stripes online edition. That's the, you know, the official publication of the U.S. Armed Forces.
Mm-hmm.
And they, you know, they talk in their kind of mundane, matter-of-fact way about, you know, World War III is going to occur tomorrow. I'm being facetious.
Right.
But it has an article titled, "A NATO Land Command Fully Operational," says Commander. And they talk about a military exercise that was conducted in Germany. But they say the following, which I think, you know, your listeners really ought to know about if they don't. It says this regarding the exercise, the scenario dealt with the hypothetical invasion of NATO member Estonia. Here's Russia at NATO's northeastern corner. You know, I'll give you one guess as to which nation it is that hypothetically invaded Estonia. It then says that 3,700 troops took part in the scenarios simulated with both computer and traditional training events. These are field exercise versus command post exercises.
Right.
Included everything from missile strikes to cyber attacks. This is planning for war with Russia. Pure
yep.
and simple, indisputably, there's no other interpreting that event. And, you know, I had occasion, if I could, go off a little bit from topic, JD, that I did an interview on Sunday for a foreign news station. We were talking about the fact that the U.S. is going to, you know, send an additional 1,000 troops to Afghanistan under NATO leadership.
Right.
And, you know, I mentioned, and this is something that, because it's not, you know, sensationalistic, perhaps, doesn't grab headlines, that for several years, NATO spokespeople or NATO statements have And this goes back to the NATO summit in May of 2012 here in Chicago, that with the wind down of the operation, or the drawdown as they term it, in Afghanistan, where NATO, U.S. and NATO had 152,000 troops as of maybe 2 years ago, that's, you know, considerably more than the Soviet Union had at peak strength.
Right.
The United States is now in its 14th year of a war in that country, the longest war by a long shot in America's history. But that with the wind down or the drawing down of, you know, NATO operations in Afghanistan, that the troops would return, at this point, keep in mind, combat trained, combat hardened, integrated into a 50-nation military combat force under NATO. 50 nations. and that they were now returning to their homelands to restore the mission of territorial defense in Europe. That means war with Russia, pure and simple.
Wow.
And I had occasion to mention, you know, the nations that had troops gaining combat experience in Afghanistan under NATO command as being several nations that border Russia. Mm-hmm. They are Norway, Finland, Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, Poland, Georgia, and Azerbaijan. And the Georgia had several thousand troops. They were the third largest contributor of troops, after the United States and Britain, as they were the third largest contributor of troops in Iraq after the United States and Afghanistan. And when the five-day war between Russia and Georgia occurred in August of 2008, at that time Georgia had 2,000 troops serving in Afghanistan, you know, under NATO, as well as, you know, not only bilateral arrangements with the United States, but as part of their NATO obligation.
Wow.
The United States flew the airlift of those 2,000 troops back to Georgia during the war. Which means that the U.S., for all intents and purposes, was a belligerent in that war against Russia at that time.
To put it mildly, that, yeah.
Then the troops were withdrawn, the Georgian troops were redeployed essentially to Afghanistan, where they remain for the last 6 years. Georgian political and military officials have said regularly, words to the effect that our military has gained invaluable combat experience in Afghanistan, as in fact they have, and guess against whom? Not Alpha Centauri.
Right. I don't know.
I don't know how matters could be any more glaringly obvious.
No, I don't either. Well, and you can even couple that with all these reports of the quote-unquote intercepted Russian bombers that keep coming out of Finland and Sweden. But you read these reports, and it's like they were intercepted over international waters, which is a legal place for them to be. So
yeah,
who's really the aggressor here, you know?
Today's big story, you know, I think tomorrow's may be even more interesting. Tomorrow will be Loch Ness Monster finally captured. but today's big story is NATO warplanes monitoring mysterious submarine off coast of Scotland.
I didn't see that story. What was that story about?
It's all over Reuters and so forth. Let me see if I can bring it up. We're running out of time here.
We are, yeah.
Yeah, but that's you know, kind of the big headline grabber now in Yahoo News, you know, to incite yet more hysteria and so forth.
Well, and that's it. It's the beating of the band drums or beating of the war drums by just the West, by NATO, you know, and we see every day you see more stories saying, oh, Putin's a bad guy and this is what they're doing and blah, blah, blah. And I really appreciate you coming on because honestly, you know, this is such a confusing issue to people. You're getting so much misinformation from all sides. And unless you really understand the history of not only NATO, but of the agenda behind NATO, it's very difficult to see where we might be going from here, you know?
Yeah, one last thing, if I may. For the last 2 weeks, originally on November 22nd, I think again yesterday, the Russian Foreign Minister, Sergei Lavrov, had stated that the U.S. and NATO, the West as a whole, does not simply want to affect Russian foreign policy. It wants regime change in Moscow. His words.
Wow.
That the U.S. is aiming at nothing other than toppling the Russian government as it did that of Ukraine. And that, you know, the things like, you know, making life intolerable for the Russian people through plunging their living standards, you know, devaluing the ruble and plummeting the oil price and so forth are all designed specifically to bring such suffering on the Russian people that they'll tolerate if not participate in.
Yeah, just absolutely incredible the links that the West is willing to go to make something like that happen. Unfortunately, Rick, we are out of time. This has been a wonderful discussion. Thank you so much for joining us on the Red Pill Reports radio broadcast today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Oh, I'd love to have you back in the future. Ladies and gentlemen, tomorrow at the 11 o'clock, our guest will be L.C. Vincent. We'll be talking about the true nature of music and frequency again. So do student back in for that. Take care, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow.
First of vague words that are synonyms for progress and pair them with footage of a high-speed train. Science is doing lots of stuff that may or may not have anything to do with us. See how this guy in a lab coat holds up a beaker? That means we do research. But we also do business in the USA, or want you to think we do. Check out this wind energy thing in Indiana, and this blue-collar guy with dirt on his face. lest you think we're a faceless entity, look at all these attractive people. Using a specific ratio of Asian people to black people to women to white men, we want to make sure we represent your needs and interests, or at least a version of your skin color in our ads. Did we put a baby in here? Yep,